Hello, everybody, and welcome to Narrative. The U.S. House of Representatives has just elected an election-denying, pro-impeachment, anti-democracy, Russian disinformation-peddling, true Trump believer as the Speaker of the House. The 51-year-old Mike Johnson from Louisiana became House Speaker in a surprise late-night push by extreme House Republicans, and he secured the full House vote today. Johnson is far, far, far right, and he's expected to continue investigations into Hunter Biden's laptop and possibly trying to impeach Joe Biden. And did we mention he intends to work closely with President Donald Trump should Trump win again? My guest tonight is someone who knows Mike Johnson very well. He served with him in Congress, and he's here to reveal why the new speaker is a danger to democracy. Minutes of Narrative's reporting, every story that we break is made possible by our patrons. You too can become a patron by joining at patreon.com/narrative.
Narrative, where truth lives.
This is a big moment for Republicans who have been waiting for 22 days to elect a House Speaker. They've been unsuccessful three times. This is now their fourth. And of course, they'll be thrilled to finally have someone in the space where they can do all this good work that they need to do in the coming days. Now, we're about to see him be sworn in, and as luck would have it, we have a very appropriate guest tonight. Denver Riggleman is a former congressman himself. He certainly knows this caucus as well as anybody else. How are you, Denver? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
Now, we're going to talk to you about your book, The Breach, and about everything you found out on the January 6th committee where you were a staffer. But let's get your thoughts while we have you here on Representative Johnson's election to House Speaker. Do you know him, and what do you think of him?
I know Mike. Not only do I know Mike, he's very courteous. He's a very professional guy. What's interesting to me, though, is Mike was probably one of the leaders, really, on the election deniers, based on the amicus briefs, but also the fact that he was active on the text messages that we found when I was a senior technical advisor on the January 6th committee also. So you can be a very nice, gracious individual and still have some belief systems and some ways about your political way of doing business that could be a little bit crazy. So it is interesting. I think this is a speaker that was actually elected on because of exhaustion based on how the caucus usually functions. And they saw that they needed to do something. And Mike was probably the most palatable from the Freedom Caucus across to some of the moderates. But it is a bit of a surprise. He's actually as extreme on his voting record and his election denialism as Jim Jordan.
I was thinking the same thing, but it is breaking news here. Then if you're saying that he was actually on the text messages as you were doing the analysis for the January 6th committee?
He was actually mentioned by Mike Lee. So if you're looking at Mike Johnson, he actually signed a private letter to support any, I would say, election challenges to Donald Trump on November 7th. And he actually admitted to it. He actually sent a tweet out on November 7th, I believe, 2020, about that specific letter, even though he didn't mention anything else that was in the letter except for one specific portion of it. I knew about this a long time ago. Obviously, So again, yeah, I guess I could have a beer with Mike if he were to drink. But on the other hand, I think it's very difficult to square that his belief systems or what he believed on election denialism and those conspiracy theories, it really is right down the line with what Jim Jordan believes. So you don't have any difference in really the ideology of the speaker, but you do have a difference in the temperament of the speaker.
And tone is wonderful, and it's important to have someone there that's kind of be respectful of general rules and be as confrontational. But on the other hand, as you point out, he is probably in line with Jordan in terms of the impeachment or the Hunter Biden investigation. These are two things that were key in Jordan's agenda, and they might be key now in Johnson's agenda. So that presents a very different kind of future for the House than we had previously anticipated with a more moderate, potentially, House Speaker. Do you think there's a risk of that?
It's going to happen. There's no way he's going to be elected Speaker if he doesn't allow something like the Hunter Biden investigation to continue, or some of the issues with Ukraine, which you're going to see pop up. There's no way to get around it. Funding for Ukraine is going to be a problem long term. I don't know about short term because they need to prove that they can govern. But again, I think there's a problem here. The problem is you can hide some pretty extreme belief systems behind a gracious veneer. And it's something that we've seen in the past. And I think for me, being a former member of the GOP conference, it's really difficult to watch the fact that you're going to, honestly, if you look at the three individuals, it's two of the three, you have people who voted against the electors. And it's just, for me, seeing all the data that I've seen, I probably know more about the data and more about January 6th than anybody on the planet. And again, it's really bothersome for somebody who's facts-based.
But you've got a House Speaker who is an insurrectionist, or at least an election denialist, potentially also an insurrectionist. We don't know, depending on what text messages you found out on those on that day. But you've got certainly someone who's not following the normal rules of democracy in third in line to be the president of the United States. That is disturbing, to say the least.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's horrific. And I would never thought when I was in the conference from 2019 to 2021, and you got to remember, I was the one standing up against QAnon. As we did the QAnon resolution with Tom Malinowski in October, I was the only Republican to speak on the floor. December 10th, I warned about violence on January 6th and also on January 5th. I never thought I would see somebody like Mike Johnson go down that line. But again, I've really underestimated the power of Trump in this party and the power of individuals who are willing to give up any semblance of reality in order to hold a gavel. And I think that's what you see right now. And again, it's really hard for people to hate Mike Johnson. He's fantastic to be around in person. But I think that's the allure. And I think that's the danger, is that you have people like that who really sign on to some of the worst legal arguments you could probably imagine when it comes to January 6th, and somebody who bought into the QAnon conspiracy theories. It's just that simple.
Did he buy into the QAnon conspiracy theories as well?
If you look at the briefs and how the elections were stolen, and what are the reasons, right? You're talking about maybe they're padding ballot boxes, but you also had Italian satellites. You had broken algorithms and Hugo Chavez. You actually had hammer and scorecard. You had the big conspiracy theory that NSA was actually manipulated. You had the other one that the CIA was manipulating it. You also had the ballots that were being actually burned, if you remember, about the white vans, and they were actually pulling that out, or that the Chinese servers were actually being redirected ballots through Chinese servers, which is what you got from the ASOG investigations and things like that in Andrew County, and also from Phil Walton. Yeah, buddy, I know too much about it. And if people signed on to Stop the Steal, it had to be one of those lines of inquiry. And all those lines of inquiry really did bloom from QAnon trolls and from some of those sources.
There is a difference between the base QAnon theories and election denying. That seems to be like a different, you could do that and still not believe in QAnon. It isn't almost.
It's tough.
Is it?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to separate that. Now, you're talking about the 139 in the House and the 8 in the Senate. You can't really separate Stop the Steal from the actual propaganda that started on November 3rd. If you're talking about Stop the Steal and what they were spreading, it was the election was stolen. If you're for Stop the Steal, if you're not willing to look at what the actual facts and data, are you nominally conspiratorial, or are you just going along with the flow and with the base ones? And even if you're just going along with the base ones with the stolen election, the base, certainly 70% still thinks the election was stolen. And anecdotally, if you were to come to my distillery and you want to talk to individuals of why, you absolutely know it's broken algorithms in the deep state. So we're all the way back to the deep state, the New World Order. All that stuff is a QAnon base sort of fertilizer. It's a conspiracy sticky bomb. What I try to tell people is that even though I say people are QAnon adjacent, just means they gravitated to something where they weren't willing to actually dig in to look at facts-based insights based on data. And I think that's where Mike is right now, is that he never really looked at the facts of the case. And a lot of the facts that he believes, the truth that he believes, did start from conspiracy theorists.
So then he is a firm believer then in potentially the Hunter Biden claims, and he probably doesn't think of them as Russian disinformation, as many others do. This Hunter Biden investigation and the potential impeachment of President Biden has been worrying me a lot looking at the upcoming year. Certainly, if it was not going to be a Jordan or someone like that in the speakership, then it would have been potentially easier to see how the House would not have had to deal with it. But it appears now that this is going to be a thing. With Johnson in there, it appears that we're going to go down the road of this Hunter Biden and the weaponization of government and all these other, they're not necessarily incorrect, but they're weaponized bits of information that come from foreign governments and potentially foreign intelligence agencies applying our election system with information that shouldn't be out there under normal circumstances.
So I'm in a unique position, and you probably already know this, is not only did I see the data in January 6th, I also have the Hunter Biden forensics. Our team actually was hired by the Hunter Biden legal team to look at all of Hunter Biden's data. And it's not just the fact that we know that Rudy Giuliani had very close relationships with agent administration, by the way. So there were really two teams looking at this. It was the Chinese and the Russian team. It was Bannon and Giuliani. So when you look at the basis and the sourcing of this data, it's the same people who did January 6th. It's the same folks. Hunter Biden was another flank to 2020. He'll be a flank to 2024. We know the forensics. We have all the data. We know there's no data in the public sphere that can be linked to any single device. That's why you see the Hunter Biden lawyers being so aggressive. But on the flip side of that, your point is so well taken. is that you have a lot of individuals out there who somehow believe that there's this globalist plot and Hunter Biden's laptop caused COVID or some ridiculousness. That's the thing that we're fighting right now.
I knew you were involved in the Hunter Biden investigation, but I did not know, as you point out there, that it's a Chinese-Russian partnership that has put out that. That is really interesting to me. How do we know that it is Chinese and Russian?
Guo is in jail right now. Miles Guo, we're talking about Guo Wenjing, big benefactor to Steve Bannon. We also know Steve Bannon was working with an influencer named Lu Day, who worked for Guo. Guo was actually financing a lot of what Bannon was doing. But Bannon is actually on tape saying they were using editorial creativity with Hunter Biden's data, and this was war. All that is out there in the public sphere. Mm-hmm. You can go look at it. So there were two teams working this. We also have video before April 2019 when the laptop was supposedly taken to the shop of John Paul MacIsaac. January of 2019, you have Rudy Giuliani talking to Shokin about trying to get information on Hunter Biden. So all this stuff, there's a reason the Hunter Biden legal team is so aggressive right now is because of forensics and because of data. We don't even have to go into that. We don't even have to go into the fact that it's specific state-sponsored foreign disinformation. The fact is that it's non-vetted forensic data, which means that there's no chain of custody, and there's actually different versions of the data out in the public sphere. And some of that data is being used by Congress. And the very person who actually pushed that data out worked for Peter Navarro. That's Garrett Ziegler and Marco Polo. So you have the crazies are doing their crazy thing. It's the same folks. Hunter Biden's public persona has already been destroyed. He already did do bad things. So, Zeb, the hardest thing about this is this. How do you put into the public sphere that somebody who did bad things and admitted to him, even in his own book, Beautiful Things, how do you then look at the data and say, listen, he might have done bad things in the past, but they're not doing money laundering with multiple governments. It's ludicrous. And it's a really difficult thing, I think, for the Biden team to navigate.
That's exactly it. It's the two things that people need to understand is it's coming from foreign governments and it's designed to disrupt our elections. It's election interference, just like it was in 2016 and just like it was in 2020, or maybe a little less so in 2020. But it is election interference regardless of how you do it. And it's what it's really doing is weaponizing the GOP caucus and weaponizing the speaker in this case against the president. It's untenable, really, if they continue down this road of investigating it. And as you point out, there's so much disinformation and misinformation about it. As far as I know, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, it's not even really a laptop. We're not even talking about a laptop. It's probably an iCloud hack of some sort that has been downloaded into some hard drive and then distributed around and messed around so many times that who knows whose fingerprints are on there. It could be anybody.
Let me tell you how ridiculous it is. John Paul MacIsaac, the owner of the Mac Shop, Zeb, he actually wrote a book about it. And really pretty much admitted there is no forensic copy. He just copy and drag files that can be easily manipulated with no chain of custody. For me, that book's called American Injustice. I don't want people to spend money on it. You might as well be spending money on a really badly written comic book by a 7-year-old. But
your book.
Yeah, I would rather you spend money on The Breach. That's actually facts-based and has validated data. But when you're looking at people like John Paul MacIsaac, who is legally blind, and somehow he has a specific identification of Hunter Biden immediately that he puts in his book, it is a head-scratcher. But on the other hand, there's no conspiratorial issue here. You just had a person who lost their mind, who is far right. And there's so much to this because it's so data driven. What it comes down to is you had bad actors that thought they could manipulate data and leverage the president of the United States through a son and through an addictive period of addiction after Beau Biden died. That's pretty much what it is. I hate to tell people how boring it actually is, but the far right does have a propensity to do very well in the information warfare space.
Yeah, and they said they have foreign allies who are helping them with that. So that makes it a lot easier for them to influence the information space. It's interesting, as I was listening to a interview with John Paul the other day, one of the things that he mentioned there was he was under some sort of threat by Ukrainians in his first interview. So that's what he talks about. So who knows if there's a Ukrainian mob with some hit squad that was after him? That's what he said.
I can't. Listen, in the book, he was afraid of a basket of fruit.
Yeah.
He thought a Biden assassination team was going to poison fruit. So you're looking at a guy who's a fabulist. He has a conspiratorial mindset, maybe doesn't live in reality. And he's linked to Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani and Bannon are the primary sources of the Hunter Biden data. And that's what the press has actually been running with. And I think, again, when you have great attorneys like Abby Lowell that work for Hunter now, I think they're saying how crazy this was, but I do think the Hunter Biden team waited too long, and I've told them that. But again, that's why you see this aggression now, is because the data's been, there's been forensic principles actually applied to the data out there, and it's shown how insane some of this really is.
Is there any evidence of any transactions between the president and Hunter Biden? I'm sure there isn't, but I'm just asking for the record.
Listen, from the data we've seen, I have to do that as an analyst, from the data we've seen, It's awful that President Joe Biden would actually loan money to people and actually get paid back. How awful is that? I'm being sarcastic, by the way. It's fine. But I think what we've seen so far in the data that we have, which we probably have as much, if not more data than the FBI can't go into, because there's so many devices, by the way. People have no idea that this is much bigger than just what happened in John Paul McIsaac's shop. I don't know if you already knew, Zev, or how fantastic your comment was, that this was more than a laptop. Laptop and data are mutually exclusive. You can have a hard brick of a laptop, but it might not represent the data that's being actually pushed to the public. Right. And what we've seen so far in that specific data that's been pushed to the public is nothing that suggests any of the things that Comer and the Oversight Committee have actually condemned Joe Biden about. We just don't see it.
Okay. What's interesting, though, is that Johnson looks likely to push all this further, and we're likely to see a stepped up Hunter Biden investigation and potentially an impeachment attempt here of the president. But let's move on to January the 6th and your book, The Breach, which is an incredible book. It really is a good page turner. And I was surprised by
the
questions it answered for me, because I had so many. Our own investigation here of January 6th, it was really interesting to get your perspective on all of this. Tell us, the book is largely based, I would say, on the text messages of Mark Meadows, who's in the news today because he is flipping on, or at least appears to have flipped, on President Donald Trump by testifying before the Jack Smith grand jury investigating January 6th. Now, we're not quite sure what that means. We're not quite sure how much of an immunity he's been granted or how he got there. But nevertheless, he is a key factor in Donald Trump's trial there. And he's a key factor in your book, because it's an incredible array of text messages that you have, which really outline the whole thing. It's like the whole story. So if you're looking for a analog to John Dean and Richard Nixon, Mark Meadows might be it. Tell us a little bit more about the text messages and how you lay them out in the book.
I called them the bourbon text, Zev, because when I first read them with the names, I had to take a drink. Jesus, especially with the Jenny Thomas texts, which were some of the most disturbing in the text message, but there were so many. But really what we saw is, you can see the first text, and it's some trivia, Zev, the first text that we got on November 3rd, the first one that Mark Meadows sent us, was David Bossie starting to talk about the legal arguments to how to actually overturn the election. By November 5th, we had Jenny Thomas, we had the Rick Perrys, we had everybody and their mother talking about alternate electors very early in the text messages. I think the shocking thing is that the bottom line was up front, Zev. When you talk about the text messages, alternate elector theories, the sort of the weird cyber investigations that were based on false pretenses and data that were run by the Seth Keschels and the Phil Waldrons, Meadows had connection from everybody, from the investigators that were doing this crazy stuff, all the way up to the cabinet and congressional members that were actually pushing forth any type of theory they could, to the point of sending YouTube videos from foreign countries on how the election was stolen, actually using foreign disinformation, which was just validated data. Zev, I'm not telling you anything I can't back up. 1 million ways to Sunday. And that data was sent to the archives and law enforcement agencies. It's just pretty incredible to me. Once I read the text messages, it is, I think I was the first to coin the Rosetta Stone for the January 6th investigation, but it was certainly a roadmap. And it showed how, gosh, there was two things. It showed how saturated QAnon was up to the top when you're talking about Jenny being able to talk to Jared Kushner and Mark Meadows. But it also showed the extent of Christian nationalism at the same time, in this thread that God was going to push Trump over the top regardless of the election itself. And I think those are the things that I had to sit back and take a drink and look at it really in a way that I did not expect. I hate to say that I was naive, but I did not realize the depth of those belief systems at the highest echelons of the GOP until I saw the text messages.
It is quite remarkable that you have misinformation and disinformation reaching the White House and the senior staffers at the White House so easily, and that they are so easily influenced by what was out there on Twitter at the time, when we all knew that was not a good place to source factual information from. So it's stunning. And then these characters that show up in your book, like this Patrick Byrne, just tell me a little bit about Patrick Byrne, because he's such an interesting character. He is, by all accounts, a little bit crazy, if not a lot. And so tell us a little bit more about how he factored into the story. How did he get into the Oval Office? He's nobody, really. He's a CEO of Overstock, but he was the CEO. But how did he get into the Oval Office, into these high-level meetings about what to do with January the 6th?
Money and crazy talked in the Trump administration, Seven. Now, you have a guy who actually flew specific individuals like Enrique Tarrio on his jet, the leader of the Proud Boys. But Byrne was so wrapped up in the conspiratorial thinking. I don't know if you know this, and if I'm telling you stuff you already know, I do apologize.
Right.
But he had a website that was dedicated to a lot of these conspiracy theories. And as he said that the Senate you know, had actually employed him as a secret agent. He had an extensive, bizarre relationship with Butina from Russia. This is a guy who, I don't know if he's schizophrenic. I don't know if he's actually some credulous, ridiculous individual, or he's just a cynical guy who's trying to be part of the power structures. But Patrick Byrne is very dangerous. He's dangerous because either he drinks his own bathwater and actually it tastes good. He actually believes what he's saying. Or he's such a cynic that he just wants to get into the positions of power in any way he can. The way that he had access, honestly, is through the sort of the Giuliani, Flynn, Bernie Kerik, all those individuals who actually gave him access because of the money that he could actually provide to the cause. And who let him in that night to the White House was a guy, a kid named Garrett Ziegler. Garrett Ziegler worked for Peter Navarro when he allowed Flynn and he allowed Powell and he allowed Navarro in there. Garrett Ziegler, who worked for Navarro, he's the one who runs the Marco Polo website that is actually pushing out the unvetted data on Hunter Biden. It's the same people, Zev.
And that connection existed, but you're right. A lot of this stuff coming out on Hunter Biden from this guy Ziegler, and that is his website, Marco Polo. His nonprofit, actually, Marco Polo, which is an interesting name for a nonprofit. Especially
yes, people that go around with their eyes closed.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And a pool game.
Mr. Ziegler.
I know it's about the Explorer, but it's so ridiculous. Yeah. And the stuff that he had is already, it's already being disproven. And that's the thing that's happening right now, Zev, is that that's why I think you have so many people that are starting to shut their mouths, because the stupid like to self-identify. And Byrne seemed to be on that trip of self-identifying as Ziegler is. But I think people need to know that Ziegler worked directly for Peter Navarro. And people know that he helped him write things like The Immaculate Deception, which was really the roadmap, the crazy conspiratorial roadmap of a stolen election that Trump actually alluded to before he put out his tweet, Will Be Wild, if you remember that. So that is the exact publication he alluded to, or the exact same people who helped with that, are the exact same people pushing out the Hunter Biden data. Every mainstream media should know the sourcing. I think they've been absolutely, it's almost criminal that they haven't seen that the sourcing that they're getting for a lot of this comes from the same people who really did try to coordinate January 6th and put out that crazy stuff.
That is so important for everyone to understand. You talk about Patrick Byrne, he being in a relationship with Butina, who is in the Duma right now as a representative for the Russian people. It's not like we have to imagine that she's a Russian asset or spy. She is a Russian asset or a spy.
Asset and a spy.
Of their, you know, in right. their parliament there, in their Congress. This guy obviously getting a lot of information and direction potentially from Butina. He's funded her campaign or something like that, and I think has supported her in other ways. It's not like he's not allied to the Russians. He's certainly got connections to the Russians. You've got Navarro. Many people have said he's connected to potentially. You've got Steve Bannon, who has definite connections through Guo and others to the Chinese. This is when you talk about all this disinformation going around and the QAnon thing, it certainly feels like the president was surrounded by potentially a lot of spies.
I think it's almost like the Trump administration supporters like to spoon with Russians and Chinese. It just seemed like that was their thing. But it's all about follow the money. See, people want to put all this, that's the reason data can be so boring and exciting at the same time. All you have to do is follow the money. Mm-hmm. And the money goes, if Guo is funding Bannon, and Giuliani's hanging out with Firtash and Derkash, who are, I think one or both of them were sanctioned by the Trump government, by the Trump administration, by the way, as being connected to Russian spy organizations. When you have these kind of people that are around, I don't like to say all the time, because I've been in intelligence where there's smoke, there's fire. But I will tell you this, when there's blooms of smoke and you actually see the flames, there's probably fire. That's really what's happening there. Your comment's dead on. There's so many foreign actors that are surrounding these idiots that you have to come to a conclusion that maybe there's some influence going on that's not great for the United States of America.
And coordinated influence. For me, the striking part of all of this is it's not just China working independently or Russia working independently or any of these other countries working independently. It's all coordinated somehow behind the scenes. So, you know, who's driving that coordination has always been fascinating to me. Now, talk about plumes of smoke. There is a lot of evidence around Roger Stone, Alex Jones, and Michael Flynn, and Steve Bannon, for that matter. None of them have come up in any of the indictments, and it's a mystery to me as to why, although I can probably figure out why. But do you know why they haven't come up in the indictments and why we've not seen the key organizers of January the 6th face any prosecution?
I think it's absolutely a head-scratcher unless they're cooperating. But I did call them the four horsemen of the grifterverse. If you look at Stone, Flynn, Jones, and Bannon, the Four Horsemen of the Grictorverse, and their driver was Sidney Powell, right? She was the one actually driving the chariot. But that's the issue that you have, is that none of them have been brought up yet. And they were so intertwined with all the planning and everything that was happening. Roger Stone really pushed up the steel in 2016. It was really his brainchild. When you're talking about Alec Jones, you're talking about a guy who, gosh, just wasn't Vivek Ramaswamy on his show yesterday, I believe. So he still has a lot of sway in the far right. Mike Flynn is running Reawaken America. I think he really wants that national security advisor, or he wants DNI position with the Trump administration, if Trump were to win. That's why you see Flynn getting back into as the remora fish on the great white shark that is Trump. Mm-hmm. And Steve Bannon wants back in the administration so bad. That's his whole thing. He's a leech. He's a parasite on the American public. So these four people, the fact that we haven't seen them yet is really interesting to me, because we have so much data. We have so much facts. But, you know, they always lean on the First Amendment. We believe this actually happened, even though we know they were grifting off of it. It's just a really difficult thing to get my arms around why these individuals aren't in front of the man right now.
Donald Trump will be, in all likelihood, the candidate, or the nominee, sorry, for the elections next year against Biden, which will be stunning. You spend a lot of time in the book talking about Ginni Thomas and Clarence Thomas and this bizarre, unusual role that she played in all of this, because it is something that you discovered yourself. You had all this data, and in amongst that data was a phone number that you were able to attribute to Ginni Thomas. Tell us a little bit about how that went, and because it's a fascinating story.
Oh, goodness. We had cleaned about 90-95% of the numbers, and there was this one number. We were pretty sure from the content it was Ginni, but we couldn't validate it. And I'm like, we're not going to let this out unless we can validate it 100%. And what we found was that all of her phone registrations were under her maiden name, Lamp, and actually not under Thomas.
See these particular text messages. I guess the first one here is from her to Meadows.
That these individuals were actually helping with policy or pushing that to the chief of staff, to the American president. But it seems like something broke mentally with these people. And it seemed like they were always susceptible to this kind of nuts. As Ginni had her issues in the younger days with the cults, as I mentioned in the book.
Yeah.
But I just think there's a susceptibility issue. And I think the Republican Party has allowed that crazy to creep into the highest levels of policymaking. And my fear, the reason I wanted to point this out, Sev, is that do we actually want political individuals who are elected to make policy out of fantasy and fantastical thinking or magical thinking rather than facts-based insights based on validated data? And I think right now you have somebody coming full circle on Mike Johnson, who was following along the line of a stolen election. Regardless of how that election was stolen, the fact that he was willing to go that far means that he was also bought into the fabulous thinking, or he's a complete cynic. And I think both of those are disqualifying in some ways.
It's so interesting you're talking about those factors. And I looked at Ginni Thomas's connections to all these other people. She's an activist, for sure. She's an activist, but she's more than just an activist. She's a real leader inside the Council for National Policy. This is a platform for being part of the CNP Action Committee, where she's the director there of this action committee that was involved in, not surprisingly, securing conservative victory in November by using the iVoter guide, and basically how to nationalize the election by using the issue that got Trump elected. She's really a key factor in designing policy and in implementing policy. And of course, her colleague on that committee, none other than Mike Flynn, not just tangentially tied to this guy, but directly tied to him. And then the same thing with Bannon. You've got the Groundswell Organization, which they founded 30 years ago. Thereabouts, many years ago.
You're correct. It's an old organization.
Yeah, which is basically where this all started, where this whole MAGA movement started, was Ginni and Bannon way back then. So you've got, and if you want to go a little bit further, here's her good friend. I forget her name.
Cleta Mitchell.
Yes, exactly. And she is also in business with Bannon and Guo, really. It's Bannon and Guo in this organization called Citizen of the American Republic. This can't be coincidence. It seems like maybe Ginni has been like the center of some sort of sting herself, or some sort of influence operation, or she is the center of some influence operation. I'm not sure, but she's connected to all these people who are involved in this January the 6th and all this other development over the years of the MAGA. It seems remarkable to me that such a thing has happened and that it remains okay. No one's done anything about it. She hasn't been prosecuted. He's still on the Supreme Court. Everyone's okay. There's a whole influence operation involving the wife of a Supreme Court justice, and we're going to let it ride.
Oh, and I think it's the thing that made me the most angry about the Ginni Thomas interview is the fact it wasn't under oath. It wasn't recorded. They let her get away with saying things that were just absolutely ludicrous. She is married to the most powerful Republican in the country. I've told people before, they don't understand the power of the Thomas name. whether it's fundraising, whether it's endorsements, the talk sheet gets anywhere. And you talked about groundswell. Well done, by the way. Well done. Because you're talking about groundswell, but I guess what else? Code Red, Northern Virginia Deplorables. You talked about the Council for National Policy. You talk about the simple fact that she had her own consulting firm where she was leveraging these issues through Liberty Consulting. She was one of the first to actually leverage Citizens United with Harlan Crowe. You have somebody who has been in these political realms and able to walk into the president's office to demand certain types of hires. And to say that her husband, somehow is not aware of her activities or that somehow they're not sharing this is so pathetic. And here's why I know. If you look at the end of the text messages when she refers to her best friend and talking to her best friend, she admitted in the interview that her best friend that she noted that she was referring to is Clarence Thomas. Listen, she knows everything she's doing. And when we talk about the executive and the legislative branch being part of the coordination, if Jenny Thomas is part of this, we have to make some educated guesses. Educated guesses, was the judicial branch also involved in these coup-like activities? And that's what I brought to the committee. They weren't real happy, I don't think, in some ways that I found the Jenny Thomas text in some respects. I think it was too big, but it really was an eye-opener to me because I had no idea those texts were embedded in there.
Can you end on that? Because it is interesting that I guess it was Liz Cheney who wasn't as excited about receiving the Thomas text as you might imagine. Why was that?
I try to get my arms around it so many times is that I think part of it was Trump was such a specific target of the investigation. And I know that we were really hot to trot on the Flynns and the Roger Stones and the Bannons at the time, especially the Sidney Powells, but also the attorneys around Trump. We were looking at that hard and the alternate electors. I think the Jenny Thomas thing would have taken so much work in such a short amount of time. Maybe that's a factor. The fact is I wanted to subpoena Jenny Thomas officially. And I thought we should actually subpoena her phone records. And I think that's where it got to the point, like how far can we go with congressional authorities on the phone records? Here's the other thing. You're going after a conservative sitting Supreme Court judge at that point. And I think there was a fear for that. But for me, Zev, as being a former congressman and having the juice that I had, you have to follow the data wherever that data goes. That's it. I had no other. I'm just like, if Jenny Thomas is in the text messages and there's other indications she's sending in emails downrange saying that they should overturn the election to state legislators, it's probable that we should probably look at what's going on with phones and looking at other types of communications. But that didn't go far. I am glad eventually that they got to interview her, but I do think that is one of the poles in the tent that we should have, I would say, investigated more thoroughly was Jenny Thomas's connection to all this.
And to Mike Johnson is frankly what I want to know now is exactly who is texting whom between those two. That would be really interesting. Just these are some of the texts. She sends Meadows this text, do not concede. It takes time for the army who's gathering for his back, meaning the president's back at that point. Then on November 10th, she says, help this great president stand firm, Mark. The left tastes their power. You are the leader with him who is standing for America's constitutional governance at the precipice. The majority knows Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist of our history. Wow. So some big words there. Sidney Powell and improved coordination now will help the cavalry come and fraud exposed and America saved. Don't let her and your assets be marginalized instead. Help her to be the lead and the face of this whole January the 6th investigation that this crazy attempt to overturn the elections. This is November 13th. She's pushing Sidney Powell as the lead face of that, which we know where people think of Sidney Powell today, who also just flipped, by the way. And then on November 24th, this is a fight of good versus evil. Evil always looks like the victor until the King of Kings triumphs. And this is Meadows' text to Thomas. Just speaking of like these people are quite into their belief systems, which is fine. Well, this is the way they're talking about the world at a time when America's in crisis. And this is what the same team that we want to put back in power, it seems.
And it's who they would be. I think Trump learned a lot of lessons. Make sure there's loyalists over competence. If you look at the lawyers like Hirschman and people like that who actually came to the committee and talked about how crazy it was behind the door. But look at some of the senators, Zev. I'm glad you pointed those out and you highlighted them. You think about talking about making Sidney Powell the lead in the face. That's how you got to remember, Zev. I was the first one with the validated phone number to read these text messages that weren't Jenny Thomas or Mark Meadows.
You must have been stunned.
I immediately called the senior advisor there. And I said, we have something so big. I said, I'm not only stunned, I think this really is the key. I think it really is the third leg of the stool. If you're talking about executive and legislative coordination for January 6th, when you talk about Trump team and you're talking about individuals like the Mike Lees of the world, but also the Andy Biggs and things like that, that were on the text messages, so many individuals that were in Congress that were pushing us, and even obscure individuals like the Rick Allens and Mark Harris, just really a lot of individuals pushing this. You had the wife of a sitting Supreme Court justice who said that she was talking directly to Jared Kushner, and she was coordinating with Connie Hare and Louie Gohmert's office and forwarded a text messages from Connie Hare and Louie Gohmert's office to Mark Meadows. So we know he was talking to congressional leaders. She was talking to executive branch leaders. We absolutely know now, based that she was talking to her husband about some of this. So are you telling me that at some point Clarence Thomas did not understand what his wife was doing behind the door or the emails that she was sending? It's so hard to suspend your belief systems on somebody who says that we weren't talking, that it's a tough time for me, and why I think, as well as we did, as well as the J6 committee did, I think there's another year where we have to look at the data that we have to look at the real command and control infrastructure of what happened that day.
And Ginny Thomas might be well in the middle of that. This is my own chart that I did. I don't know if you ever seen it, but it's
nicely done. I've never seen this. This is fantastic.
We did our own investigation here for a year before you guys started yours, because we thought this is a crazy thing, that this thing isn't being investigated in great detail. So we kept going at it. And it's not as complete, obviously, as you might want it to be, but it does include the White House. And Ginny Thomas is right there in the middle of that sort of White House team. I have questions, though, about a couple of these, and I've always wanted the answers. Whatever happened to the Moonies? They were a big part of this, but no one ever talks about them. Who are they, and why weren't they a big part of it at the end?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Fantastic. The Moonies love to have them some Donald Trump talking to them, right? And yeah. I think you're referring to them owning massive publications like the Epoch Times, where they were pushing disinformation, just pouring out of publications that were funded by the Moonies.
And
we also know that—
Nephew.
Oh, go ahead.
The guy who was the nephew, what's his name?
Goodness gracious.
Just down there under foreign operative.
Yeah, it sure is. I'm looking right now. Yeah, I know exactly. And part of it, Zev, and I will tell you this, I wonder if I've had some of the J6 stuff. I know so much. I don't know if it's leaking out of my ear, because as soon as you said Moonies, oh my God, I remember us looking through all of that data. It's just amazing that you have so many foreign influencers that are even covered in what you put up here on this incredible chart. If you look at the Pentagon, SCOTUS, White House, VP's office, and foreign operatives, there's some other people that were on the text messages I think that people don't know about, like Ben Carson.
Oh.
Like George Perdue. Mm. So, yeah, there was other cabinet members that were going back and forth on what was happening here. And obviously, you had some former cabinet members that were very involved, like Rick Perry.
That's a very key operative involved in all of this.
Absolutely. And so you did a wonderful job here. I'm not stunned at all. Of course, you guys would do a wonderful job, but it is amazing. I love the fact, I love the militias that you have up there. You're missing one.
But we did cover it then. We just didn't include
it. Okay.
You're at least on the day.
Yeah, you're running out of room. You've done such a great job here. But especially at the Capitol, when you're looking at those individuals, there's actually probably closer to 30 to 35 that you could even have on there as far as legislators. But you did a fantastic job covering this. This is very thorough. Very good.
Talked about the Moonies. Thank you very much for that compliment. It's nice to get it from someone as esteemed and knowledgeable in this sort of thing as you. But also, it does seem to me like the foreign stuff disappeared. China is very involved in the Epoch Times and NTD, this like the constant drumbeat that comes out of Alex Jones, who's clearly loved by the Russians. There's just so many Russians around and so many foreign operatives around. And the Chinese kept covering this wall to wall on all their networks. How much of January 6th was foreign influenced, would you say?
I think foreign influence obviously had a large piece of this because of the money that could flow. And I love your foreign operators graph there. That's wonderful, by the way. I think, again, I'd love to talk to you offline on some others. So we had probably, I always told people, like, what's the percentage, Dan? What is it, man? I said, 1% is too much. Right? 1/10 of 1% is too much. But if you're looking at the 5 to 6% level, which is huge, I think you had people that were willing to take those foreign monies and influence based on the power that Trump needed. So you almost had this perfect storm of people who were susceptible, people who were grifters, people who were power hungry, people who were also using Donald Trump as a mark. I think a lot of people don't realize Donald Trump is a mark for a lot of these individuals, like the Roger Stones and things like that. He's a huge mark. He's a moneymaker for these people. And so I think there is this perfect storm of foreign and domestic influence. I think we need to look even further into the foreign influence. I think if we allow that type of access based on the unscrupulous and immoral that you see around Trump, I think we're really in for a bad time. And I would say that, I've said this before, Zev, I think it's going to get worse before it gets a lot worse. And I think we're in real trouble going into the 24 election cycle based on what Trump learned after January 6th, is that you have to have complete loyalists around you. You can't have anybody that's competent, or things like lawyers coming to the January 6th committee and stating your state of mind or talking about your state of mind will happen. So my biggest fear is we're going to have maybe one of the worst administrations we've had in the history of the United States if Trump were to be reelected, based on your graph and what you showed with foreign and domestic disinformation that was actually coordinated.
And a very tumultuous election season. And a lot of people want to believe that Joe Biden has just got this clinched. It's just not the case. I mean, you look at the polls right now, it'd be lucky if he won. And you've got now an empowered, radical, extremist, if you will, Speaker of the House, who's going to be pushing an agenda. There'll be foreign involvement all the way through the end. I think it's going to be very lucky if Joe Biden succeeds in winning this, even though Donald Trump is hampered going into the 24 election. It's still going to be difficult. And people shouldn't be naive. That's how complicated an election this is. And we still are fighting for this democracy day in and day out. And everyone should read your book, because it really is fantastic. The Breach, the Untold Story of the Investigation into January the 6th by Denver Riggleman and Hunter Walker. It's really good. Do you want to share about it?
I've been very fortunate. It sold pretty well. But I think, even if you don't buy this book, we just go to the library and look at the frickin' text messages and look at the outline of what happened. And now what you're saying with Jack Smith, or what you're saying with Fannie, what you're saying with all of the prosecutors, really, I feel sadly validated now that the data is talking so loud. And I think what you're saying, the aggression of the Jack Smiths, is the fact that they had more than Congress did. They have more authorities. And Mark Meadows, he fought his phone records. We couldn't get them. But I tell you who does have them, Jack Smith. And I think those phone records is really what opened this up for Mark Meadows. Again, to come full circle from the beginning with you, Zeb, I think the breach really was the baseline data that we can use as a jumping off point. Well, that's what's happening now. And I think what's going to happen over the next few months.
And we wouldn't have had Jack Smith without the committee and your work in the committee. So thank you very much for your service there. Quite a remarkable thing to go back from being in Congress, back in as a staffer for the committee. Terrific work. It's really a good page turner. And it's really interesting information for those of you that are interested in how January the 6th really unfolded and the involvement of everyone in the White House and elsewhere. It's a fantastic read. I highly recommend it. And hopefully you'll be back on the show. We're very interested in how the Hunter Biden investigation is going. So we'll keep in touch with you on that. And thanks for being on tonight.
I really appreciate you, and thank you.
Every minute of Narrative's reporting, every story that we break, is made possible by our patrons. You too can become a patron by joining at patreon.com/narrative.
Narrative, where truth lives. One day, you'll tell the story of autocrats, crooks, and kings who came for our freedom. A story of citizens who stood up to tyranny and won. The people prevailed and renewed an old vow to a more perfect union. And that was just the beginning. The story continues. Narrative, where truth lives.